This morning we're going to focus on the first part of Parshas Noach. The Torah tells us in source number one, Eile Toldos Noach, these are the offspring, the generations of Noach. Noach ish tzadik tamim haya bedorosav. Noach was a righteous man, complete and wholesome in his generation. Esha Elohim hisalich Noach. Noach walked with God. So many of the commentaries find the word bedorosav to be intriguing. Noach was a righteous man in his generation. What does that mean? So Rashi famously tells us in source number two that there are two ways to understand this word. Says Rashi, bedorosav, yesh mirabo seinu dor shemo so l'shvach. There are those who use this word as a form of praise for Noach. Noach was a righteous man in his generation. Kol shekein, how much more so, she'ilu haya bedor tzadikim haya tzadik yoser. Imagine how much greater Noach would have been had he been surrounded by fellow righteous people. Meaning it's very hard to be exceptional and to be someone that's incredibly spiritual when you're in a generation of people who are just the opposite. So Rashi says Noach was great for his generation. Imagine how much greater he could have been had he lived in a generation of Avram, for example, where he would have been able to learn and be inspired from the actions of others. So that's one take of the word dorosav, and Rashi tells us, continuing in the second line in source 2, v'yesh ador shemos lignai. There are those who use that word and see something negative. Lefi doro hayatzadik. Noach was only a tzadik in his generation. V'ilu haya v'doro shel Avraham. But had he lived in the generation of Avraham, lo haya nechshav klum. He would have been considered a nobody, a persona non grata. Because Noach was only impressive by contrast. If everybody else is very, very bad, so Noach was mediocre, but mediocre in comparison to very, very bad is very, very good. So these are the two different ways of understanding this word in the Parsha.
Except they said, no, he walked with God.
Very good. So that's true. There, not only that, he's not only described as a tzaddik, tamim hayami, these are lots of very powerful adjectives that seem to show you that Noach was someone very impressive. He walked with God. All of those points are well stated. But the question is, despite all the Torah's language in praise of Noach, was it only a tempered praise? Because had he lived in a different generation, he would have been overshadowed by really great people. You're right. It's a lot of words to say, oh, it's not really being so praiseworthy. To overlook tzadik, tamim, hitat et Elohim, hitalich Noach. To overlook that and say, well, it means that, but only in contrast, very challenging. I agree. Yes.
I have a question to ask. I hear what Rashi said and I read it.
Okay.
But I cannot understand how could they even make a comparison to Abraham, because Abraham's part was completely different than Noah.
Right.
So the comparison there, it's a little, I cannot, first of all, two great people cannot be at the same time. Then you cannot recognize.
Right.
Yeah. Either this or the other one. So I agree.
These are challenging psukim. I agree. So look at the Ramban, who gives us a more simple understanding of the word. Says Ramban in source 3. He first begins by quoting Rashi, and then he goes on to say, "V'hanachon be'enai l'fi apshat." The simple way of understanding this word, bidorosav, in his generation. Kitamo lomar shehu levado hatzadik bidorosahim. He alone was a righteous person in his generation. There was nobody else. That's all the Torah is coming to tell us. Ein bedorosav tzadik v'lo tamim zulaso. There was no one who was righteous and as complete as Noach in his generation. That's it. V'chein ki oscha ra'isi tzadik lefanai bedor hazeh. In the beginning of the next parak, Hashem is going to talk to Noach. He's saying, Noach, the time has come to enter the teva, you and your family. Because I alone see you as the righteous person in this generation. The implication is, shein acher bedor ro'i lehinaso. There's nobody else in the generation that's worthy of being saved. V'amar bedorosav. Noach was a righteous person in his generation in plural. Kidoros Rabim Avru Me'es Shehishchisu. There were many generations that have passed by, that have gone and come in Noach's lifespan, since the people of the world began to really corrupt their ways. And despite all of the generations, despite all of the years that passed, nobody was up to snuff except for Noach. So that's the Ramban thing. Ramban says there's just a simple understanding of the word. The Torah is not creating a contrast to Abraham, Noach would have been nobody. Noach would have been much greater. That's not what the Torah is doing on the Pshat level. On the Pshat level, the Torah is just telling us that Noach alone was the only person worthy of being saved in the many generations, in the many years that Noach lived. Very nice. Comes along the Kli Yakar in source number 4 and tells us there's something even deeper going on in this opening pasuk. Look at the Kli Yakar, it's so beautiful. Source 4. Ish tzadik tamim haya bedorosav. That Noach was a righteous person, wholesome in his generation. Says the Kli Yakar, lefi shedur hamabul hishchitu hitivu b'shlosha minei hashchasos. The generation that ultimately died in the flood corrupted their way with 3 different sins. Sheniskeru b'parsha, that are referenced, some of them are referenced explicitly, some of them are referenced a little bit more subliminally, but either way, the generation of the flood is responsible for the following averos. Behem avodah zarah, they are responsible for idolatry. V'gilue rayos, for promiscuity. V'geza, and also for theft. Alken hikdim lomar shenoach haya gadur b'shloshta. So that's why the Torah begins by telling us that Noach was careful with all 3 areas. And you see that from the very opening pasuk of our parsha. Ki ish tzadik. Noah was a tzadik, which means what? Hainu shel haya gozel mishel acherim. He was righteous. He had no theft on his hands. Completely, completely clean of all areas of gezeila. Good. Tamim, he was wholesome. What does that mean? Hayab tamim hayab bedorosav. What does that mean? Hainu shehaya gadur me'arayos. Noach protected himself from promiscuity. Kinolad mahul v'haya tamim. Noach was born according to the tradition with a circumcision, and he was wholesome. And this, having a circumcision represented, was symbolic of the fact that Noach did not involve himself with issues of sexual impropriety that everyone else in the generation was involved with. So that's what we learned from Tamim. So now we understand Noach was not involved in the Gezel. Noach was not involved in the Gilui Arayos. So what about the first sin, Avodah Zarah? Where do you see the first pasuk telling us that Noach was not involved with Avodah Zarah? Where do you see that? Beautiful. Etah Elokim Italich Noach. That's what the Kli Yakar says. Etah Elokim Italich Noach. Lofana El Elohim Acherim. Noach did not look to the other gods with the lowercase g. Avaldor Hamabul Partsu Geder Shloshan. But the generation of the flood that was wiped out with the flood, they were completely involved with all of these sins. So what a beautiful insight of the Kli Yakar, right? Why does the Torah begin Parshas Noach with this description of Noach? Because it's telling us there were 3 areas that the Dor HaMabul were particularly corrupt in, and it's specifically those 3 areas that Noach excelled in the positive. Noach was a tzaddik. He was righteous. There was nothing stolen that was associated with him at all. He was not involved with that sin. He was a tamim. He was wholesome. He was not involved with sexuality. And lastly, Noach walked with Hashem. He was not involved with Gilui Arayos. A beautiful insight of the Kli Yakar that deepened our understanding of the pasuk.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Abraham was the one to be the first one to be circumcised.
Correct. At least no. Abraham was the first one that we learned about explicitly who was circumcised. But according to the Medrash, even Noach was circumcised.
Oh, right, but this is maybe circumcised being born. This
yeah, okay, that's true.
But so my question is, because the rest of the people around him weren't circumcised, mm-hmm. So what happened to all the teaching of Abraham? I know there are 10 generations between.
Right.
So something went down.
Very good, I'm not sure. It's a very good question. It's a good question. I'm not sure. So let me just show you one other beautiful...
Forgive me for
yes,
practice.
No problem.
Nobody talks about circumcision of his sons.
Correct. Well, they didn't know that it was a mitzvah yet. The Medrash, which tells us that Noach was born circumcised, that is telling us that Noach himself was born special. But it's not that he knew of the mitzvah of circumcision. That wasn't introduced into the world until Abraham's time. Good. Let me show you a beautiful Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma of Meir Simcha Midut says something that is just magnificent. And his interpretation of the word tzaddik and tamim looks at Noach not only where we find him in the beginning of the story, but also where we find him at the end of the story. Let me show you what I mean. Says the Meshech Chachma, source number 5, tzaddik tamim, right? The Torah describes Noach as being a righteous person who is also wholesome. Says the Meshech Chachma, hinei shnei doros hayu. If you look at Noach's lifetime, it can really be broken up into two different segments. Dor echad shelifnei hamabul, the first generation or kind of the first time period that was before the flood. V'dor echad shelachar mabul, and a second generation, and again, it's really a time period. It doesn't mean a generation. It means the second time period of Noah's life after the flood. So there was the pre-flood Noah, and there was the post-flood Noah. Uvigemara, and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us as follows, and you're going to see how the Meshech Chachma so beautifully weaves together Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah Shebichtav. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah describes Noach as follows. Tamim, Noach was wholesome bidirachav in his actions. Tzadik, he was a righteous person bima'asav in his actions, in his actions. So diracha means in his ways, the way he interacted with people, and tzaddik was in terms of his actions. Upeirish Rashi, Rashi tells us on that Gemara in Avodah Zarah, tamim, what does it mean that a person's tamim bidiracha? He was anav v'shafal ruach, he was a person who was humble, he wasn't arrogant. Tzaddik, he was righteous, v'lo chamas, without any corruption or evil on his hands. Vihine, listen to this, it's so beautiful. Bedor shelifnei hamabul, in the generation, the time period before the flood, hayama'ala so shahaya below chamas. Noach's shining point was that he was someone who didn't have chamas, while the rest of the generation did. Shekulam hayu chomsin b'shutufin b'arayos. All of them were involved in thievery and steeped in issues of promiscuity, v'hulo. And he was not. Aval achar hamabul, after the flood, hayukulam gedurim ma'arayos uprushim mechamas. After the flood, everyone got the message. Nobody was involved with promiscuity anymore. People weren't stealing anymore. Amnam, however, Noach was a tamim. He was anavishafal ruach, bidoro ein chashivos. You see, before the flood, the fact that Noach was humble, no one cared. No one cared about Noach. It wasn't a big deal that he chose to be humble. He wasn't anyone that people were ooing and awing about. But keep on going. Aval achar hamabul shenishar levado. After the flood, when he remained alone, v'Hashem dibir imo uberecho v'etzilo. Hashem spoke to Noach. Hashem blessed Noach. V'hayazan mefarnes kol ha'olam. And Noach was the one who supported the entire world. V'lo haya miska'eh. But he never let it go to his head. As hayanechsha b'masha hayu anav. Then it's impressive that Noach remained humble. If God talks to you, if you're the one responsible for saving the entire world, and you don't let it get to your head, that's a very impressive feat. So here's where the Meshech Chachma is putting it all together. So let me just take a step back. Again, the Torah describes Noach as being a tzaddik and a tamim. As being someone who's righteous and someone who's wholesome. The Gemara describes that tzaddik refers to someone who is tzaddik b'ma'asav. A person is righteous with his actions, that he's not involved in corruption. Tamim, the Gemara describes, and Rashi fleshes out, refers to characteristic traits. He was humble. He was not arrogant. So says the Meshech Chachma that these two descriptions apply to two different points in Noach's life. Before the flood, what was the shining characteristic of Noach? He was a tzaddik. He was without corruption. Because everyone else in his generation were all corrupt and he was not. So the word tzaddik really defines Noach pre-flood. But tamim, which talks about how he was not arrogant, he was humble, that's really a description of Noach after the flood. Because after the flood, Noach really could have become arrogant. I saved the world. God speaks to me. And despite that, Noach is able to keep perspective and not let his ego get the better of him And that's the crowning jewel of Noach after the flood. So the two words that the Torah uses at the very beginning of Parshas Noach, Tzadik and Tamim, are really describing Noach in two different points of his life. Tzadik below Hamas in the beginning point, before the flood. And Tamim b'dirachav, as Rashi explains, that Noach was an ana b'shafaruach, really describes Noach after the flood, when he did have reason to become haughty, but didn't. That's really where the Tamim part began to shine. Does that make sense? It's a beautiful insight of the Meshech Chachma that these two words really speak to two different points in Noach's life. And that just to finish it off, the last little jewel of this Meshech Chachma is that we will read, if there's time, the first part of Perek Zayin, the first Pasuk. Hashem turns to Noach and he says, Noach, enter into the Teva now. And if you look in source 12, just turning the page for a moment, this is the beginning of Perek Zayin where Hashem tells Noach, enter the Teva. How does Hashem describe Noach? Ki otcha ra'isi tzadik. I've seen you as a tzadik lifanai b'dor hazeh. As a tzaddik, why does the Torah use the word tzaddik here?
Because it was before.
It was before the flood. And the reason Noach is being told to enter the Teva and nobody else is because he doesn't have Hamas. Everyone else has Hamas. And that's why the Torah doesn't use the word Tamim over here. Because Tamim really is going to highlight Noach after the flood. But as Hashem is telling Noach to enter the Teva before the flood begins, Noach is told he's a tzaddik. Because that's the crowning jewel of Noach at this point in his life. Beautiful insight of the Meshech Chachma. And again, the magnificence of the Meshech Chachma throughout his commentary in the Torah. But as you're seeing over here, is that he's able to weave together Torah Sheba'al Peh. He takes the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, Rashi's comments on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, and weaves it together and shows you how it's relevant to the Torah Shebichsav as well. Yes?
I have one question here, because God later on, even though I think he recommended him, because he had 120 years to build the Teva.
Okay, we're going to get there.
He did not do anything
to save it. Good, Bezrat Hashem, we will get there shortly. But before we get there, let's discuss something fascinating. In Source 6, just 3 psukim later, from the beginning of the Torah portion, Hashem says that the world needs to come to an end. And what does he say? Look at the language that the Ribbono Shel Olam uses in Source 6. Vayar Elokim et ha'aretz v'hinei nishchasa. God looks at the world and he sees that it is completely corrupt. Ki hishchis kol basar et darko l'aretz. Because all of the flesh have corrupted their ways. All of the flesh. What does that mean? So it says Rashi something startling based on a medrash and a gemara. Ki hishchis kol basar afilu behema chaya v'of. Even all of the animals, behemoth refers to the domesticated animals, chaya refers to the wild animals, oh, for the birds, all of the animals, niskakin l'she'ina minam, were essentially having relations with different species. Right? Because the Torah tells us in Parshas Bereishis that Hashem says you should be fruitful and multiply, but everyone has to say l'minehem, according to their species. You're not allowed to intermingle. And says the Torah over here that God is furious because hishchis kol basar. All the flesh has corrupted themselves. And Rashi explains it means that even the animals were cohabitating with different species, something that they're not allowed to do. That's how bad things got. Asks the Beis Halevi in source number 8, what is going on here? I understand man. Man, mankind, capital M, Baal Bechira. We have a choice. We have the ability to choose. Okay, so we choose to corrupt our ways. But animals don't have choice. So just because human beings corrupted their ways, how does that translate to the animals corrupting their ways as well? What's going on here? Look at the question that basically we asked in source number 8. V'yesh lahavin, debish lama ha'adam u'baal bechira. I understand man, capital M. They have free will, and they can make decisions. Aval ha-behema, when it comes to animals, hare ein la yetzahara le'inyanim ka'elu. They don't have any evil inclination when it comes to these matters. V'yasiyasa hurak b'tiva. It's natural for animals to want to procreate, but there's no evil inclination. V'aich tasa k'devarim halalu. How can we learn that they too corrupted their ways? That's the Beis Halevi's question. comes on the base lady and tells us something so powerful and so inspirational. It's scary in terms of how bad it could get, but it's also very empowering in terms of how good it can be. Look at what the Beis HaLevi says. This is the last paragraph on the first page. Rak ha'inyan. This is the matter. Dikimo de adam poel be'atzmo ayidei hirgilo b'ma'asav ha'ra'im. Just like a person can become, can allow bad behavior to become routine, right? Because anything that you do in routine becomes second nature to you. You don't even think about it. You kind of just do it. What's tavashnia? Second nature. A person can become so habitual in sinning that it becomes second nature. They don't even think about it. A person can become so habitual in doing the bad things that they used to do and what previous generations used to do. A person can really go down very quickly and they don't even think about sinning anymore because they're so used to it. Even if a person rationally understands that it's not good, the activities that they're involved with, it doesn't make a difference. You become so habitual, you don't even think about it, you just do it. You can't even do tshuva. Again, second nature can become so strong, even if it's for the bad. Keep on going. These are the startling words of the Beis HaLevi, the bolder words over here. A person's nature can become so powerful what their routine is that it doesn't just affect human beings, it actually affects nature as well. Second nature, what the activities that you take on can become so powerful that they don't just affect your human nature, they affect Mother Nature as well. Let's go on in the Beis HaLevi. V'lomi ba'im chet b'farhasia. We're not just talking about public sins. Harei vadai degorim la'acherim haroim she'yilmedu mimenu. Certainly if a person sins publicly, so other people learn from those actions. Ela afilu im chote b'tsina. Even if a person sins privately, beino levein atzmo, between himself and no one else, mikol makom al yedo himshichu acher ezetava. There's a certain lust that's introduced and reinforced in the world. Hu magbir kolcha shel atava halazu ad shemashrish ze b'teva shel kol habiruim. A person can introduce lust and desire into the world to such an extent where it becomes so powerful that it affects even nature, even the animals. So how could the animals have sinned? Well, they don't have a choice in the matter. That's true, but the Beis HaLevi says that man's actions are so powerful that when they become so entrenched in this world, they become second nature to human beings, that also seeps over into animals as well. That's the power of a human being. The actions, the collective actions that a community does, seeps into not only ourselves, but also the animals that surround us. What a powerful idea. And that's why even the animals had to be destroyed. And that's why the Ribono Shel Olam says, ki hishchis kol basar, all of the flesh. Because we're responsible for creating a second nature of sorts in nature as a whole. Very powerful point. Just look at the second paragraph over here on the second page. Kichein yisad malko shel olam. This is the foundation. These are the kind of the genetic code that the Ribon Shalom created the world with. Behitivo teva lekobriosav lihios tivaam nishtanev v'nimshach achar maaseh ha'adam v'hir gala v'hir gilo. That the Ribon Shalom created the world with this mechanism that based on human beings' actions, the rest of nature will follow. V'kvirov asiyas ha'adam ken yishtana teva shel kula im ma'at v'im harbeh. Depending on how the majority of the world is acting, that will affect the rest of the natural world. That's a very powerful idea by the Beis HaLevi. Very, very powerful idea. The koach adam. How much power the Ribon Shalom gave us. not only to affect our actions, but to affect the actions of the world, the natural world which surrounds us. Very, very powerful idea. Okay, let us move on, and Akana will address one of the points that you mentioned, and it comes out from the very next pasuk. So far we started in pasuk Tes, where the Torah describes Noach, the different adjectives that the Torah used to describe Noach, what we learned from those adjectives. We now just discussed why the Ribbono Shel Olam felt that the entire world needed to be destroyed, not just human beings, but also the animals. By the way, the fish were spared. The fish, because they're in the water, they're in a different environment, that man's behavior didn't get to the fish, and that's why the fish were spared from the Mabon. It's intuitive, right? Because if it's a flood, so fish can survive in a flood. Okay, yes.
I'm having a very hard time with this.
Okay.
Really. I don't know, me or the people setting up the animals to mismates?
Well, we're not setting them up. It's more that it's a derivative of our actions. I don't think the people were intentionally looking to have the animals mismate, as you called it. But the point is that when man's actions are so powerful that they affect even the natural world around them.
It's like you throw a stone in the water,
right,
and you have ripple effect.
Correct. Very, very nice there. Very good. Beautiful idea. I agree. For the scientists in the room, it might be a little bit hard to swallow, but this is what the Beis Levi is saying. This is part of the genetic code of the way the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world.
But I think that for the scientists nowadays,
right,
they are doing all kind of things that it's not right.
Interesting.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah. No, but what happens is they would never mismatch animals because the animals they create that way is sterile.
Well,
that's true, but the
Beis Halevi is not suggesting that the people themselves were looking to deviate from the natural way of procreating animals, but the animals themselves picked up this behavior because it was a part of the actions of the people of the world at the time.
Yeah.
I think it's a very powerful idea.
Then I have a question about this, because God told Noah which animals to take and how many of each kind.
Correct.
And then to put them in their own things.
Right.
So my question is, how come and what? Where will they have those animals that has not been affected?
Correct.
With I
don't remember if I saw this inside, but I would imagine that the Teva only accepted the animals that they themselves have not yet been involved in sin. I remember seeing that somewhere. The Torah, the Teva was very selective about who it let in. So the animals that got in were the ones that had yet to corrupt their ways. So look in the source number 9. This is Pasuk Yigimel. Vayomer Elokim leNoach. Hashem tells Noach, Ketz kol basar ba lefanai. The end of all flesh has come before me. Ki malah haaretz chamas mipneihem. Because the whole world is corrupted. They're involved specifically in the sin of robbery or theft. V'hinini mashchisam es haaretz. I'm ready now to destroy the world. Just to show you what this chamas was like, this corruption, this theft, says the Sforno, I just thought this was very sharp. Ki malah haaretz chamas mipneihem. The whole world is involved in theft. Shekulam gozlim zedza. Everyone's stealing from each other. Habalim gozlim esa aris bekawach. So the owners of the field would steal from their workers. And aris is like a sharecropper, but it means people who work the field. So the people who were in charge, the owners, would use their power to forcibly steal from the people who worked for them. V'aris, the people who were working, gozel es habalim b'mirma. They would steal from their bosses secretly. Be'open sha'aretz nosenes kol peroseh le'gazlanim. So the whole world, everyone was involved in theft. And that was just the straw that broke the camel's back, because we mentioned earlier that the world, everyone was involved with gilui arayos, promiscuity, and idolatry, and lots of things. But certainly theft was the straw that broke the camel's back. So asks Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar a very difficult question. And it's one Chanan you mentioned before. You know, when Hashem told Abraham that he was going to destroy Sodom, which was just one city, not an entire world, what does Avram do? Avram gets up and he says, Hashem, how could you do this? Will God destroy an entire city? And Avram goes on the defensive. How can you let this happen? Question is, over here, Hashem comes to Noach and he says, Noach, I'm destroying the entire world. And Noach remains silent. And how could it be? Avram jumps into action and does not allow God, although he's not successful, but does not want to allow God to destroy even one city. Yet over here, Noach is quiet when he learns about the destruction of the entire world. So says Rabbeinu Bechaya, the question is a difficult one. I'll share with you his answer. It doesn't answer all the questions, but it's certainly a certain take on the issue. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, V'kan HaBen Shoel, he's drawing from the Haggadah. Here we have to ask, Kevan Shehaya Noach Tzadik Tamim, Kemo Sheheir Alav HaKasov, V'hu HaMotichim Be'enei Hashem Yisbarach, since Noach was a Tzadik Tamim, he was the apple of God's eye, if you will, Lama lo haya mispalal al bnei doro v'yachzirim l'mutav? How come Noach doesn't daven for the people of his generation? Kimoshe matzinu be'Avraham avinu kimiyad shehodiu akadosh baruch hu peronos shel Sedom shayu rishayim gemurim hispalal aleihem. Immediately after Avram hears about the fate of the people of Sodom, Avram davens for them. Kama pamim lebilti yishlitam. Avram just doesn't daven once; he davens again and again and again. Hu shamar hinei na ha'ati ladaber ladoni. So Avram says, Hashem, I'm just starting to daven. He keeps on going again and again. Ve'omer od al na yichar ladoni kein haya mina garishonim anevim shei negashim el Hashem lispala lefanav al bnei doram. That was the minhag. That was the custom of the leaders of the prophets. They would entreat God on behalf of the people. Yet Noach is strangely silent. Everyone who's the leader of the generation is responsible to daven for the generation. So what about Noach? So here's the answer of Rabbeinu Bechaya, and I say it won't fully satiate everyone around the table, but it's a starting point. It says Rabbeinu Bechaya, V'tshuvas hadavar, ki ma shechadal Noach hatzadik, lispalal be'adam, lo b'mared v'lo b'ma'al. Noach wasn't trying to be rebellious, wasn't being treacherous, when he decided to remain silent. Ach nitoch shahaya yodeya shekiyam ha'olam be'asara. Noach understood that the world needs 10 righteous people to survive. V'chinyan shedarshu abosinu zal, this is based on the Mishnah Avos, be'asara ma'amaros nivra ha'olam. We know that God created the world with 10 utterances, with 10 statements. So the number 10 is a number that's very important. And Noach understood that if it's going to be less than 10, Hashem's not going to save the world. The way I like to think about it is that 10 represents community. Right? You need 10 men for a minute. 10 represents community. The world wasn't created for an individual. The world was created for a community. So we can't save a whole people unless there is a community of people who are deserving of it. And Noach understood that there was not a community, not 10 people who would merit the world being saved on their behalf. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, "V'ilu haya b'bnei hador asara anashim tzadikim. Had there been 10 righteous people, lo haya maybe aleihem ha'mabul. Then Noach understood that God would not have even brought the mabul. Ki haya ha'olam miskayim b'shilam, because the world would be sustained because of those 10 people. Aval boya teva lo haya kimchas. How many people entered the teva? How many individuals walked onto the teva? Noach v'ishto, that's 2." Vishloshes banav, that's 6. Vishloshes neshe banav, another 3. The children's wives, that's 8. V'lefish alo nishlemu la'asara, and since there were not 10 people, lo haya ru'uyim sheyinatzel hador b'shvilam. Noach understood that the world would not be saved because of them. V'day sheyatzel Noach shaya asiri et nafsho v'nafsho speto. It was good enough. Noach felt he was thankful enough that he and his family would be saved. And the Rabbeinu Bechaya goes on, we won't read it inside, but he goes on to point out, the same thing happens with Avram. Right? Let's remember. Avram says, will you save if there be 50, 40, 30, 20? But he doesn't go below 20. He doesn't ask for 10. Or 10 and below. If I'm
10 was the last.
10 was the last. Right. 10 was the last. Exactly. He doesn't ask below that. Because Avram understands that smaller than 10, Hashem won't save. And the way I understand it is because 10 represents a community. If you don't have a community of people who are involved in good, then they don't, then that's it. It's not worthy of being saved.
There were 8 of them.
Right.
Not saying that his kids were good though.
So there are different understandings of how to look at the kids. Were they independently worthy of being saved? Or were they just saved because of Noach? Let's be generous. And let's assume, as Rabbi Bechaya is, that they were themselves being worthy.
Them, why did he try to get two more?
Right. The question
it's
is...
It's not like he had to start from...
Right. Yeah, I understand. So Noach, if you really understood this, so why didn't he try at least to save two more Jews? Not Jews, two more people. And if you got that brings you to 10. If Noach understood that 10 was the magic number, why don't we see him involved in trying to be Makariv two more people?
Unless his kids were not good, they were just going on his
property. Interesting, maybe. But then, so even if he needed to get 9 more people. Then,
I have a question.
Yes.
Maybe I don't remember seeing it any place. Where did he get this idea that he and his family will be saved? Because this is before the Mabul.
Right.
How did he get the idea that he will be saved?
Because Hashem tells
him. No, Hashem tells him to go into the Teva, but this
right.
was after he already had a decree. But about why he did not pray to God to save them, because we just discussed that he was only 8
right.
instead of 10.
Right.
How did he come to the idea that those 8, he and his family, will be saved?
Because
this was before the
no, but Hashem makes it clear to Noah that he will be saved in the Teva with his family. He knew that. He knew that. And if you just look if you skip down to the next source, in source 12, in the beginning of Perek Zion, Hashem tells Noah, enter the Teva, because I see that you're a tzaddik, and you and your family are going to be saved. Yes?
So, just very simplistic, Adam didn't live in stone.
Correct.
Adam did not live in
right,
stone.
Right,
right. Okay, so he could be very generous.
Okay.
Noah was probably petrified because these are really big people.
Interesting. He's like, Noah just felt like there is just no merit that will save them.
And I think he was afraid of his life.
Interesting. That could be. It's a very nice idea.
I
agree. So the Rabbi Bechai is interesting. It's a little hard to fully swallow that Noach didn't daven because he realized that 10 is the magic number. It's interesting. It definitely works well with the story of Avram, because you see that Avram stopped davening after he knew that 10 people weren't going to be around. So that fits nicely. Does it answer all of the questions? Not really. Yes?
Avraham had also an ulterior motive because he had Lot over there.
Right, there was a familial pull, that's true. There was a familial connection which made him feel even more connected. Good, that's true. Okay, so let's just move on for a couple of more moments to the beginning of Perek Zion. And this, as I mentioned once or twice already, this is where Hashem tells Noah the time has come, right? Hashem basically says, we'll read it inside in a moment, the time has come to bring the Mabul. In another 7 days, that's it. So says the Torah in source number 12, Vayomer Hashem l'Noach, Ba'ata b'chol beischa l'teva. You and your family should enter into the Teva. Kioscha ra'isi tzaddik lefanai b'dor hazeh. Because I see you as the tzaddik in the generation. Good. Now, there is something missing in this description. What's missing? How does the Torah describe beautiful? Right. We started by telling by learning that the Torah describes Noah as being a tzaddik and tamim, as being someone who's righteous and wholesome. Over here, Hashem just says, "You are righteous." Doesn't use the word tamim, wholesome. Now that is a cause.
He didn't earn it yet.
Okay, that's interesting. Rashi says something else, and this is a kind of a famous Rashi in source 14. If you just skip the. If you skip the source 13 for a moment, Rashi says, "V'lo ne'amar tzadik tamim." We don't have the description of Noach being tamim over here. Mikan, from here we learn, "She'omrim mitzah shvacho shel adam befanav." You give a certain description of a person in his presence, but you don't go all out. "V'kulo shelo befanav." But, I need 2 minutes. But all of it not in their presence. So in the beginning of Parshas Noach, so when Hashem is not talking directly to Noach, he describes him as being a tzaddik tamim. When the Torah is now talking, when Hashem is talking to Noach, he describes him as being a tzaddik, but leaves out tamim. We don't want Noach to get too big of an ego.
Hey, did you get a disc from Abraham?
Yeah, it's right on top of your shelf.
Wait, in my
room? Yeah, on top. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, sorry.
Sure. Okay. So that is one pretty well-known Rashi. One other point, and with this we'll conclude because the hour is late. There's an interesting word which is used And it's one of the first times you see this word in all of the Torah. In source 12, what name do we have for God? Vayomer Hashem. Interesting. That's the first time in the story of Noah you see the word Hashem, Adonai. Usually you see Elohim. Right? Just to show you in source 6, for example, Vayar Elohim et Aretz. So why does the Torah use the name of God Hashem as opposed to Elohim here?
Maybe it's because they're not God, because you have a Dayan, mm-hmm. you have a stronger,
interesting,
a softer father, also strict.
Okay, so good. So you're on to something.
Yeah,
so we know, good. So we know that the name of God Elohim represents din, represents judgment. A strict midah of Hashem. The name Hashem, Adonai, represents mercy, represents rachamim. So Ramban says very good in source 15, Vayomer Hashem leNoach. The word Hashem is used when inviting Noach into the teva. Hodiu Hashem, ki b'midas rachamim yimalit oso b'beso. Because it's with God's mercy that Noach is being saved from the flood. And not only Noach, it's his family as well. And the world will be sustained from Noach and his family. And this is the kindness of the Ribbon Sholem. So that's why the Torah deviates from the word Elohim, which it usually used to describe God, but now it has Hashem because it's Midas Harachamim. A beautiful idea. And then the Ramban goes on to say that it's a hint of korbanos, because we know that when Noah leaves the teva, he gives many korbanos. Korbanos always have the name Hashem, because the korban works to highlight God's mercy. When you bring korbanos, you're attaching yourselves to the midah of rachamim of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's why the word over here, Hashem, is being used at this juncture in time. The Meshech Chachma says something magnificent, and with this we conclude in source 16. Hine, source 16, right after the first period. Hine, Hasheva mitzvos shenestav adam. You know, the seven Noahite laws. Hema musagim linimus hamidina ulan haga hativis. These are rational laws. Any state that wants to have law-abiding citizens will have certain laws, such as don't kill, don't steal, setting up court systems. There are all sorts of mitzvos that any rational country, any rational government body would come up with. So the Sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach, which reflect basic laws of society, so those are all introduced with the name Elohim, because that's universal. And that any strict government would demand that there is going to be a certain amount of civility and certain amount of manners, really, that will govern the interaction between all people. Fine. So says the Meshech Chachma, Lachen Kasav Bahen Vayitzav Elokim. That's why when it comes to Sheva Mitzvos Benoach, you see the name of God, Elokim. Shezeh Mora al Koach Kol HaKochos HaTevios. It talks about God being all powerful. Asher Murgash LeKol Me'ayin Al Abriya Bechlala Ki Yesh Elokim Baretz. Because anyone that looks at the world will appreciate that there's God here, that there's structure to society. That's all part of the way God envisioned human beings interacting as a whole. Ava. But over here, Kan She'asa Noach Mitzvah Yisera. Over here, Noach is doing something that is different. And specifically, it's referring to the fact that he wasn't allowed to have relations with his wife on the teva. And that's something above and beyond. That's something that you wouldn't necessarily be brought to by logic. That's being done because it's a mitzvah of the Ribbono Shel Olam in a very specific way. Not a global God, but this is a very specific God to Noach. And that's why the name of Hashem is used. Look at the last paragraph. Aval kan she'asa Noach mitzvah yisera. V'zehu lifrosh mi'ishto. He separates from his wife. V'kmo she'amar v'yas Noach k'chol asher tzivahu Hashem. V'yavo Noach uvanav. The Torah tells us that Noach and his children entered the teva. V'ishto v'neshei banav oso al teva. And the Torah is highlighting how they were separate. Noach and his male sons entered first. His wife and their children and their wives entered second. And the separation is meant to highlight that while they are on the teva, they weren't involved in relations. This was something unique. This is not something that our senses, our rationale would have enforced. This isn't manners. This is a very individual commandment coming to Noach and his family. Lachin ksib kan Hashem. That's why the word Hashem is used. Shezemora al hayoso misgala nivra'im b'hargasha partiyut. It's unique. It's individual. It's not klali. It's not global. It's something that you wouldn't have necessarily come onto yourself. It's something that God had to introduce. And because it was more of an individual commandment, you have a more personal name of God used. Hashem. It's a beautiful insight from the Meshech Chachma. Why the Torah deviates from the usual name of God, Elohim, and uses Hashem specifically here? Because this is something that our rationale would not have compelled us to do. It was a very personal mitzvah that God commanded Noach and his family, and therefore the name of God is switched from Elohim, which represents a more global God, to Hashem, which represents a more individual type of God.
And maybe also this is the way that Noach is teaching now the animals, because everything before was
right.
Also the animals.
Beautiful.
That didn't be
right, very good. Very
so this
beautiful.
Way give them a
it's beautiful, beautiful. So just lissikum, we discuss the different adjectives that the Torah uses to describe Noach. What do we gain from them specifically when it comes to the word Bedorosav, in his generation? What do we learn from that? Is that positive? Is that negative? All sorts of insights that we learned regarding the introductory pasuk of the parsha. We also discussed why it is that the animals were held accountable if they couldn't make a decision, and the koach adam to affect not only our own actions but even the actions of the natural world around us. We discuss why is that Noach did not daven for the people of his generation. And the Rabbi Nebuchai tells us that Noach understood that the world cannot be saved if it doesn't have a community. And if it's less than 10, there's no community. And therefore Noach didn't try to daven. And lastly, we noted that the Torah uses an interesting name of God, Hashem, as opposed to Elohim, which is the more commonly used name in this story. Either because it's simply representing the midah of rachamim, how Hashem is saving Noach, as the Ramban says, or perhaps it's something even deeper, as the Meshech Chachma develops, that Elohim is used for rational mitzvos which would have otherwise been introduced because of logic, as opposed to a special mitzvah over here that our rationale would not have necessarily compelled us to do, but Hashem gave Noach a very special mitzvah on the Teva. Alright, we continue next week, Bezrat Hashem, with Parshas Lech Lecha.